Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is August 18th, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is summertime, because it's that quiet, sleepy days of August combined with back to school, which is getting some of us revved up. Anyway, for some, it's time to rest and go fishing. It's been very quiet, and until just now when you talk to the people who are crunched by the back to the school time, so parents are getting crunched, but otherwise, still more time before Labor Day to take some time off and get rest. The economy's slow. The sell in May and go away hasn't happened. Again, we've hit new records on the equity markets across the board, and that's despite poor earnings. So the question is, that's going to make fall interesting. Will the economy pick up and fall? That's the big question. If it does not, things are going to get much more interesting, particularly because it's a campaign year. So please make sure to take time before this fall. And speaking of fall, last year there was so much brouhaha and prophecy about fall. We did a big article called What's Up This Fall 2015. And because subscribers found that schedule to be very useful, we did another one. It's up on the website, What's Up This Fall, and it goes through some of the big events coming up, nowhere near as intense as last year. Let me point out just some of the ones coming up very quickly. Central banks gather in Jackson Hole shortly. That's in August. And then the G20 meeting in China in the first week of September. Look for major discussions on the Ukraine, the Middle East, and UK Prime Minister May meeting with Putin. These are going to be important signals about how the shift to the multipolar world is evolving. The U.S. campaign is inspiring an acceleration of that process, particularly as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Transatlantic Partnership, and the Trade Services Agreement odds of passage are diminishing. Money and markets. The market is concerned that the U.S. economy is not strong, and that means that the Fed might not raise interest rates. So you've seen the dollar sliding significantly this week. All eyes will be on the Fed meeting in September. As I said, the global central bankers are going to meet in Jackson Hole, Wyoming this year. Yellen is speaking. She wasn't there last year. Their theme is designing resilient monetary policy frameworks for the future, which in English, that means what are we all going to do together when the you-know-what hits the you-know-what? Anyway, that's August 25th to 27th in Wyoming. And then September 16th, the financial accounts of the United States report. That's going to be interesting since the latest DOD audit just announced that they're missing $6.5 trillion for 2015 alone. I'll talk about that more later. And then September 20th to 21st is the next Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. The minutes from the July meeting were released this week, and they indicate a split in members between those who would bump in September, those not. So it's going to be interesting we'll see what happens when they do what they do in September. The U.S. dollar index now at 94.14, just right above 94. So U.S. dollar index down 4.7% for the year. Fixed income is still holding. The long treasury is ETF at 17.23%. That's a stunning performance. It's hard to see how it could go higher. The intermediate at 7.4%. The bond aggregate ETF at 5.8%. And the junk market still magically holding at 12.15. That's very strong. And we're seeing utilities, real estate, anything producing yield doing very, very well this year. So we now have $13.5 trillion in sovereign debt trading at negative interest rates. The critical question is, where is all the money in the fixed income markets going to go? Is it going to go to equities? Is it going to go to real estate? Is it going to go to precious metals? Is it going to go to other commodities? Is it going to go into secret space programs? We'll see. Equities, S&P now up 8.5% for the year. The home builders lagging at 4.9%. The European ETF now turning around and in the black at 1.58%. Germany doing very well, now up for the year 4.5%. The developed markets minus North America almost at 3%. Large cap China, China now in the black. Large caps are up 8%, and the small caps up a little bit more than 1%, with the emerging markets doing 18.38%. So emerging markets minus China significantly ahead of China. Commodities, the CRB index now up 7.41%, gold up 27.25%, and silver still skyrocketing at 42.3%. Oil has recovered a fair amount. It's now down 2.41% for the year. A headline that rocked the markets today, the Department of Justice announced that it was not renewing private prison contracts through the Bureau of Prisons. Now, that follows only 4 days after the ICE, the Immigration Group, announcing a billion-dollar contract to CCA for detention centers, for one big detention center. Let's look at the scope of the announcement from the Bureau of Prisons. There are private prisons now house about 22,000 federal prisoners, for about 12% of the total federal prison population. And the question, of course, will the Immigration Service and then states follow suit? If they do, private prisons are a thing of the past. That's a big concern to Tennessee, where I live. The CCA, one of the biggest private prison companies, is headquartered in Nashville. If you look at what happened to the prison stocks, both CCA and GO were down. When I first looked at them this morning, they're down 48%. They recovered and closed down 30 to 40%. It's very rare you see a stock take a nosedive that big in one day when the general market is going up. So that is extraordinary. This decision reflects many different factors. One is private prisons don't make economic sense. This is clearly a function that government is more effective and efficient at, given how much reengineering the software and privatization can do. If anything, government jobs are slated to shrink, and so it's natural for government to protect for government employee employment what makes sense for government to do. It's very hard when you're coming into the kind of budget pressures we're coming into after the election to justify paying more to do private prisons when it's clearly more efficient to use governmental prisons. But I also think that there is a lot more confidence in the leadership as to what they're able to do in terms of managing people free range now that digital technology is much more ubiquitous, and they have a lot more confidence in the mind control technology, what I often refer to as entrainment subliminal programming. So it's a lot easier and more economic to manage populations free range. And of course, if you look at how much money it costs to put somebody in prison compared to having them just be a taxpayer, or put them on sort of electronic lockdown at home, it's much more economic. Given the timing of this announcement, I assume the final decision was made at the Bohemian Grove, because we had a big study come out before the Grove on this issue. I know Department of Justice has been looking at it for a while, and my guess is the Grove made the final decision. In essence, the guys who started the prison boom had to figure out to stop it. I have had, as you know, a very long history of serious opposition to this over 20 years. I think what happened was madness. I think the harm that has been done is extraordinary. You might as well turn it around, better late than never. But the damage that has been done is pretty extraordinary. My online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, goes very much to this issue and how it relates to productivity, because my number one objection against this was you were talking about something that was massively unproductive and not just massively unfair, but certainly massively unproductive to a lot of the people who were entrapped in particularly the narcotics and drug-related issues and the nonviolent prisoners, but very unfair related to who was really dealing drugs versus, so basically the small guys are being swept up in prison and the big guys are being, congratulated as the most powerful people in our society. So the unfairness and the contribution was to inequality was astonishing, but the damage to productivity issues was enormous. I just wrote an article called Meditations on the Falling U.S. Home Ownership Rate, where I describe some of the productivity issues, and I would encourage you to read it. It starts out with a picture of the the private home of the chairman of Dillon Reed, who made $750,000. That was a 7.5 times increase on his investment in a private prison company. Things have gotten so bad that even The Economist last year blasted the U.S. for its prison industrial complex. And it's, I just think it's well, the lobbying is far from over, so this is going to take time to transition out. But as I said, better late than never. So congratulations to the Department of Justice for doing this. There are very big developments at Lockheed Martin, and it's the sign of significant changes in the federal budget ahead. Normally, I tend to believe that the slow burn can hold no matter what, but this is signs that it might not be able to. So really, this is worth sitting up and taking notice. I wrote a commentary on the website called Lockheed Cuts and Run. I recommend it to you. I'm going to read it to you right now. The latest Department of Defense audit now indicates that DOD is missing $6.5 trillion for fiscal 2015. This means for the 20th year in a row, DOD and the U.S. Treasury will refuse to comply with the law regarding audited financial statements. Money missing on DOD audits in Middle Eastern wars have now skyrocketed well beyond $10 trillion. It turns out that the folks running the accounting and payment systems have been busy taking action, not to find the money and get it back. Rather, corporate reorganizations are now proceeding to make sure liabilities are contained. In 2013, government contractor SAIC moved its government contracting business into a new company called Leidos. Now, Lockheed Martin is spinning out its information systems and global solutions to Leidos as well. The deal was closed and implemented immediately prior to the latest DOD Inspector General audit. Lockheed is the largest provider of information systems, including accounting and payment systems, to DOD and the U.S. government agencies. Needless to say, the conflicts of interest between managing the payment system for an agency that is also your largest customer are astonishing. Is this a signal that the defense contractors who run the U.S. government systems are anticipating that the you-know-what is about to hit the fan after the election? Do they want to make sure their most profitable operations, like weapons manufacturing, or operations that are growing, like satellites in space, are neatly separate from the liabilities involved with trillions going missing through the information, accounting, and payment systems they operate for the U.S. government? Don't be surprised if some of the $6.5 trillion missing has been neatly tucked away as an endowment to support future operations, irregardless of what happens to the U.S. government. Whatever the challenges of meeting future retirement obligations, the problem is much deeper than slowing productivity growth. I call it the financial coup d'etat. It looks to me like the time to reconsider citizens' escrows under state and local jurisdiction is here. The financial equivalent of citizens' arrests may be the only way to ensure that our tax dollars are going to fund lawful purposes. Interestingly enough, at the same time, the White House has just issued a new executive order stipulating the succession order at the Treasury in the event of death or resignations. Very interesting. I put up a new radio show that I did with Gordon Long from the Financial Repression Authority called The Debt Model is Done. What's very interesting is that Gordon is very much picking up on the fact that the slow burn, in fact, has been the dominant scenario, and also the importance of space. And that's very unusual, because usually people with a really solid financial background like Gordon don't pick up on these things. So it was a very interesting interview, and we walked through some of the big stories in the second quarter. It's very much organized around the second quarter wrap-up. Obamacare is really struggling. Aetna dropped from 11 of the 15 exchanges this week. They said they would do it if DOJ didn't approve its merger with Humana, and DOJ filed suit to block the deal, so Monday Aetna dropped. Obamacare is not succeeding, and it's just too much centralized control, too many rules and complexity, too little incentive in the system for people to make things work, and a complete failure to address the real problems, which is the food system and diets, environmental pollutions, spraying and vaccines, and pharmaceutical company too much power and control on pharmaceutical companies that's leading to sort of uncompetitive pricing. So, you know, there are no solutions other than real reform. So don't be surprised to see Obamacare have to get reinvented probably as a single-payer system after the election. Cyber insecurity, NSA hack tools, vintage 2013, got put online. Kind of scary. And there's an extensive Snowden Twitter comment on it. And I linked to it on the website, but I encourage you to take a look at it. There's no doubt that the failure of digital systems to produce meaningful productivity is also a serious productivity issue. It's a great article in the MIT Review recently. Forget flying cars, Silicon Valley, please produce economic growth. And, you know, systems are being used to control and to entertain and to entrain, and the cyber warfare is growing. And all these things add up to another whack at productivity. The campaign continues. I continue to believe that this is the Kingsman campaign. That's the name of one of the commentaries I wrote about it a couple months ago. It's primarily distraction and entertainment from what I can see. The Clinton email scandal was getting to the point where it was creating severe liabilities for a lot of people, not just in the United States, but establishment globally because of some of the unbelievably corrupt practices going on around the foundation. Suddenly that's been flipped, and you see a tremendous amount coming out about Clinton's bad health. And that's because Clinton's health is a liability for Clinton only. And if you can get everybody off the email scandal in a way that is threatening other members of the establishment, it's a safer way to go. Trump is clearly paying the price for political inexperience. He's using his law and order agenda to really push his candidacy. The problem is the more he talks about it, the less supportive. It's clear he's even less supportive of the Constitution than Clinton, talking about taking Americans down to Guantanamo Bay. I would say, off-putting. The positive on Trump is that he really has helped people come out of trance, and I think that's been very positive. And the reality is Washington is engineering a negative return on investment economy. And if you're a productive person, at some point you say, you know something, let's send Trump there because the whole thing will just blow up. Anyway, he has the best chance. Trump also has the best chance of ending an illegitimate war in business. My question, though, would it be small business? I've taken some time to look at Gary Johnson and William Weld. I think they're better on the Constitution than Trump or Clinton. They're still in the trance. That's the problem. Jill Stein, I like her, but she's not good on the Constitution or the Second Amendment. If I voted today, I would probably vote for Johnson. I'm not a believer that I have to vote for one of the two dominant parties. My concern is who's going to do the best job on the Constitution, who's going to do the best job on the amendment. It is critical to me that Republicans keep control of the House and Senate, I guess, for the same reason, constitutional issues and the Second Amendment, but also small business interests. So I would hate to see the Democrats get a big presidential win and for the Democrats to get control of the House and Senate, because then we're talking about a real dissent from a constitutional standpoint. Well, let's just see what happens in the next 2 months. Just a reminder, I think there's a good chance of a military draft after the election. We saw the Republicans try and pass a resolution saying that the military couldn't spend money preparing to draft women. And I think they're trying to nip in a bud what happens after the election and keep it limited to men. But if you're a parent with a draft-age child, you need to think about what this may mean, and you should anticipate that it's coming. It's going to be really a budget issue they can't afford. It's just much cheaper to have draftees than it is to pay government contractors. Another reason for Lockheed to move its information systems and global solutions business out of the company. China rebalancing continues. We saw more stories about freight trains connecting Tehran to Beijing this week. If you look at Beijing's portfolio, they've gone since 2003 to having about $3 billion investments in their foreign investment portfolio. to over 120 billion, and it's skyrocketing daily. So China's really, the China rebalancing that we talked about with Steve Roche is proceeding. The U.S. needs to start accelerating their rebalance as well. And other than have presidential campaign characters scream at each other, Lawrence Wilkerson recommended that I read a book by a group at the Case Western Reserve Innovation Lab. It's called The New Grand Strategy, and it's a strategy for sort of a re-engineer, rebalanced America. It brings us back into all the productivity themes again. It's pretty good, and I have a review of it up. If you're interested, particularly if you're a municipal official or run a company, I think it's got a very rich menu of different ideas of where real value creation can come from. So I'd encourage you to take a look. I have been way late at publishing our written theme for the second quarter wrap-up on productivity, and that's because I've wanted to take the time. I've spent a lot of time, all my weekends, working on that and writing on that. Part of it is it's so frustrating because we're in an economy where labor productivity is more narrowly defined. If you look at what's happening to human productivity across the board, it's a very different picture, and it's incredibly important to understand the two and relate the two if we're going to get back to increases in productivity growth. Anyway, but I apologize for the delay, but I must say I'm delighted that I took the time because I feel like I finally have my arms around the subject and can talk about it outside the house without punching somebody. Introduction to the Pistis Sophia. When I was in Germany, I recorded an introduction to the Pistis Sophia with Ulrich Groniger, who teaches the workshops that I love to attend. Allies from New Zealand, Alistair Thompson and Wendy, his wife Wendy, were with us. They're living in Brittany now, so they joined us. The Pistis is one of my favorite ancient texts, and it's also one of my favorite sources on the teaching of Jesus. And it really talks a lot about how to stay in a higher mind and avoid or remove entanglements with evil. And boy, is that advice we can use today. Our hero this week is our very own John Rappaport, who joins me for the interview. I snapped off a wonderful subscriber's head this week when he said, "Why is no one doing it?" Then somebody else wrote and said, "There's zero coverage of this." And I said, "You know, what do you mean no one?" And I mentioned a couple of people, including John Rappaport, and I said, "Do you have any idea what fantastic work they're doing and what they've managed to achieve in a lifetime of really digging in and figuring out what's real?" And you know, we have to let go of this notion that the people who count are the people who are our enemy are trying to brainwash us. For some reason, if you're not one of the people who's trying to brainwash us, you're no one officially. You know, anybody who lets their enemy determine their opinion of things and thinks the only thing that is real is the enemy who's trying to kill them, you know, you really got a problem. So, please be careful around me. Don't ever say that because I'm going to snap your head off. But if you look at what John Rappaport has managed to achieve and the sacrifices he's made it to do it, and the difference it's made to so many people, you know, it's extraordinary. And he continues to be someone who gives me amazing amounts of insight and energy. Ask Catherine. In honor of your upcoming interview with the amazing John Rappaport, I'm reporting on these creepy entrainment attempts by Shell and ExxonMobil. I was going to watch a YouTube video on telekinesis meditation technique before it started a brief advertisement played. It was for Shell Oil, very new agey, a Hollywood-style production about the mind of innovation, almost implying that Shell was tied to the universal mind. Then I just saw on a leading cable news channel an ad for ExxonMobil showing a black woman with dreadlocks and a white male hipster millennial implying how awesome and socially responsible ExxonMobil is, with the young man saying, "And you thought we just made the gas." Anyway, she says, "Thanks to you and John, I look at the world just a little bit differently now with my eyes more wide open." I sent her Chase Manhattan. J.P. Morgan Chase has an incredible ad of two people who look like they probably know what's really going on, walking down the, I think it's by the beach with a pet pig. And it's the same idea, just trying to make a large corporation. So in the case of Chase, somebody who's clearly defrauded millions and millions of Americans and then gotten Washington to siphon, you know, huge amounts of money. I mean, clearly a critical player to engineering and implementing the financial coup d'etat, making themselves out to be hip and cool and your best friend. It's amazing that it works, but what can I tell you? Mind control. Hi, Catherine. I share the following excerpts of a series of confidential email exchanges with my advisory group as a means by which to give you some sense of the flavor of the dialogue. Also, so to condition the response you might provide, I have previously heard you on several occasions that while you also tend to employ technical analysis with a degree of healthy skepticism, that you've become convinced over time that Rambis's technical analysis is as good as it gets. Can you give me any ammo in this debate? Are you all in on Rambis's conclusions, or if not, what other data or trends are you awaiting, et cetera, especially on PMs before you concur with Rambis without reservation? This is referring to the Rambis blockbuster chartology that we did as part of the second quarter equity overview. So if you are interested and you haven't listened to that, I would recommend you go back and look at that transcript or listen to that audio where I discuss, and of course the Rambis blockbuster chartology is up on as part of that Solaria report. I concur with Rambis with reservation, and I think his technical analysis is pure genius, but this relates to the limits of technical analysis. We're in a politically controlled market instead of a real free market. If we were looking at his charts in a free market, I would probably agree close to without reservation, but we're not in a free market, and that means that anything can happen. We have to be prepared for a very wide variety of possible scenarios. The two that concern me the most about precious metals are war or a major drop in the Chinese economy, and that could flip the precious metals charts and market on their heads. So in that sense, you know, no, I can't agree with Rambis without reservation. I just think you have to be thinking in terms of scenario design. What happens to me with my investment strategy when I see an analysis like Rambis and conclude that essentially I agree with him? What it does is it changes my percentages by not an extreme amount, but by a small amount. And, you know, then I continue to watch and adjust quarterly. So in that sense, I can't give you any strong support. I do think it argues that the ratio, both the long-term bull and the ratio of mining to gold and silver, really favors the miners. So I think your advisor said to a certain extent that they focused on fundamentals and earning opportunities, and I think generally that is the right approach in this environment. I would point out one of my big questions on mining stocks and manufacturing stocks is whether or not we're watching in anticipation of lower, even significantly lower energy costs as a result of new technology, as well as the shift of funds out of bonds into real estate and equity. So I think it's we have, whether it's new technology or we have the end of the long-term bull in the bond market, I think those two things could have a very dramatic impact on all equity sectors. Anyway, the bottom line is you've got to be prepared for a wide variety of possible scenarios. And that's one of the reasons I keep recommending hedged equity. I just think equity is the place to be. You want to be in something real, not paper, which is really what fixed income is. And we're just not in a market economy. So I just think if we get an explosion of money moving out of fixed income into other sectors, you want to be prepared. But the way to do that is to stay hedged. Dear Catherine, do you think it's possible that Donald Trump stepped in and willingly agreed to play a role that would help to get Hillary Clinton elected? I don't know. It's still too early to tell. If I had to guess right now, I'd say probably not. Have you seen the 2016 Noam Chomsky movie Requiem for the American Dream? No, I haven't, so I can't give you an opinion about it. Hi, Catherine. I came across this event and thought I would share it with you. This is a goodie. Thank you so much for sending. The New York Society of Security Analysts had a meeting called A New Space Age Race, Interplanetary Investments. Thursday, September 15th, 2016, 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. in the New York Security Society of Security Analyst Conference Center. And it's available as a live session. So that's going to be interesting. And maybe I should put that on the calendar. Hi, Catherine. I'm moving to a small community and will be choosing a bank. Can you please tell me how to determine if a bank is solvent and where I can find this information? What indicators would you look for? We have a great article called How to Find a Local Bank. And if you do a search, it's on our Find Local Bank page. If you do a search for Solari and local bank, you'll pick it up. But I walk you through the different steps of finding a good local bank. When you're looking at their financials, there are different bank rating services, and bank ratings aren't always perfect. But if you look them up, you'll get a sense of their financial strength from looking at the ratings. When you look at their income statement, you want to look at their profits. When you look at their balance sheet, you want to make sure that they have plenty of liquidity and they don't have a high default rate on their loan portfolio. They're not in trouble on their loan portfolio. I think if you're not a financial person, the way to vet them financially is after you pick out the couple that you're interested with in by the method that I describe in the article, How to Find a Good Local Bank. Just find a trustworthy financial person, whether it's a CPA or a friend who has knowledge of finance or an investment advisor, whoever the financial people in your life are, and have them take a look at it. It's pretty quick and easy to do. Okay, we get a question on deflation. Let's see. And deflation investing. We are experiencing significant deflation in certain areas of the economy and geographically. What specifically is deflation investing? Let me give you some examples. It's investing in stocks of companies that are experiencing dramatically lower cost as a result of dropping commodities prices. So when coffee was dropping, Starbucks was flying. Now, it wasn't just coffee, but you know, it was funny because there are three of their ingredients, coffee, milk, and sugar, were all going down, down, down as their stock was going up, up, up. Another example is investing in stocks that are experiencing lower labor costs as a result of the lower labor costs as a result of labor deflation occurring through globalization. That was one way of doing it in the 90s. So what you want to do is you want to focus on what sectors are deflating and then who's getting the benefit of that. Or how can you protect yourself from the guys who are getting hurt by that? So it's really a matter of looking specifically at where the deflation is happening. A question on motif investing. I think motif investing, they pointed out that motif investing can be misleading, which is true, particularly if you look at it. Generally, they show their performance on a 1 month or 1 year, which is a fairly short time frame, and without looking at other indicators, it can be very misleading. But I find it very useful just to troll for ideas and opportunities and make sure I haven't missed something in the market. So I find it a phenomenally interesting slice of looking at the market, but I agree it can be terribly misleading, so you have to be careful. Okay. Somebody sent an article on pesticide spraying on planes, how airlines are softly killing us, from Truth Out. We put it up on the website. In regards to this article on Solari blog and your comments on a recent program of getting sick after flying domestically, I've noticed the spraying for years domestically and internationally. I'm quite sure it occurs on Metro North, New Jersey Transit, and Amtrak trains as well. My first experience being a trip up the Hudson River years ago and suddenly having an unexplained chemical taste in my mouth and my eyes feeling irritated. I often sense the taste on various trains currently and on New York City subway, although there are so many smells, the spray has some strong competition. May not just be about bugs and veggies. Oh, this is very scary. I should also mention, I think it is more about bugs and veggies. I watched Vax this week, which is now available for streaming on Vimeo at $3.99. It's very economic. I really encourage you. We put a link up in Top Picks on the website. I really encourage you to watch it. It's very important for two reasons. One, to understand the debate around the MMR vaccine, but the other is to understand the extent to which we are dealing with a media and an establishment that just flat out lies. It is highly psychopathic or alien. Who knows? But it is literally out of the They Live science fiction movie. And in Vaxxed, you see the extraordinary divergence between the lies and the facts. And it's simply a case study in the extraordinary gaps between the reality and the official reality. And we need to understand that it's that extraordinary, because once you there's a wonderful book called Political Ponerology that describes how once you understand that your society is being ruled by psychopaths, you can come up with strategies of dealing with it effectively. But until you see that, it makes you crazy and neurotic. Once you see it, then suddenly you can, become an adult and start dealing with it. Anyway, let's go to the movies. A charming little documentary called Seymour, an introduction about Seymour Bernstein, considered to be a great music educator and composer. He left a career of as a concert pianist to become an educator and a composer. It was directed by Ethan Hawke, and it's just marvelous because it really communicates what a great communicator music is, and how what a wonderful role music plays in keeping us in a higher mind. I would say music is also heals us physically. I can't say enough good about. I was sitting at Bregenz and listening to Schubert's Unfinished Symphony, followed by Beethoven's Seventh, and it was literally you could feel your whole electromagnetic field being completely cleansed and re-engineered and changed. It was extraordinary. Okay, interview. If you cannot listen to this interview, and it's a great interview, please, please, please watch the little 3-minute Just a Taste video that we put at the top of each interview, because this one is just, it's classic Rappaport. I've listened to it 10 times and I can't stop laughing till I cry every time I listen to it. This is a very important conversation, how we communicate with people who are deeply committed or vested or caught in the official reality. It's something so many subscribers are calling, talking, asking about this. Everyone is struggling with this. And I hate to say it, because of the rollout of 5G internet, it's going to become a much more important conversation. It's going to make the mind control technology that much more ubiquitous, that much more invasive. And it's going to make virtual reality that much more entertaining. If you think everybody's on a trance on their smartphones now, well, you see what happens. I have literally had to reorganize my personal and professional life around limiting association to people who are in the trance and or who have left the official reality, but they don't want to proceed in a positive manner. I talk a little bit about that in the in our discussion with John. Anyway, so it's really important now, and I feel like a lot of people I used to associate with are literally disappearing into a trance of either smartphone programming or complete fear. They're afraid to talk about or they're afraid to talk about or deal with reality. Now, it looks to me like this is a serious problem for the establishment as well, because if when you create the official reality top down, you start forgetting what reality really is, and then the next thing you know, the whole population has lost its mind together. And to a certain extent, I think that's part of what you're seeing in the United States is that's why I say people who succeed in a rigged game always get stupid. Anyway, so it's a conversation with John. This is a complex topic because there are many different kinds of relationships. And then there are many different kinds of risk issues. You know, communicating with somebody about an issue that's not important is very different than communicating with somebody about whether or not I should, you know, you're trying to mandate vaccines on my kids. So it gets pretty complicated pretty quickly. But so I said to John, you know, this is the beginning of our conversation. I think we've got a lot more thinking about this issue. I do think that the pea soup of official reality versus reality and mind control technologies is making it unbelievably difficult for society to be productive. And I think this is making a major, major contribution to slower productivity growth, along with the absence of markets. I mean, markets are wonderful because they deliver reality, whether you like it or not. They smack you up upside the head with price, and that'll wake anybody up. Okay, that's it for this week. Again, great interview with John Rappaport, hero of the week and wonderful, wonderful ally. Next week, a very special interview. Harry Blaser back with the Salyer Report Food Series, interviewing Will Allen, pioneering urban farms, an amazing story, amazing person, amazing story, and very inspiring what this man has managed to accomplish. Then Franklin Sanders is going to join me on September 1st for the Precious Metals Market Report. A lot to talk about there, particularly what's going on in the what could happen after the election, how to be prepared. And then the following week, wonderful newsletter writer, wonderful commentator, has got a great website focused primarily on global spring and what it means to all of us, called Sophia Smallstorm, is joining us for All the World is a Stage. She does a marvelous job of explaining how the official reality is constructed in many different ways. So until next week, when Harry Blaser will be interviewing Will Allen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.